Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Lucy Pony in Washington.
And I'm Michael Atit, also in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Monday, February 23rd, 2015. The final phase of the South Sudan peace talks kick off in Addis Ababa.
The SPLM-SPLA delegation has come back to Addis Ababa fully aware of the enormous suffering of our people since the events of December 15, 2013. The dire condition of our people and the impending humanitarian catastrophe impel us to seek peace.
And South Sudan's government believes it has a good shot at becoming a full-fledged member of the East African Community bloc.
South Sudan, by virtue of its the progress it has been making over the last 3 years, has now been elevated to the status of negotiations.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus.
The South Sudan peace talks resumed today in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia. The talks were supposed to begin on Friday but were delayed, and IGAD's chief negotiator, Seyoum Mesfin, had a warning for all sides.
This is a final opportunity to make progress and usher in a new era of peace in South Sudan. We must not fail. After months of negotiations, you are all well aware of what must be achieved now. Genuine compromise and dialogue must take place.
Martha Vanderwolf reports from Addis Ababa. Mediators have warned this is the last chance for both sides to reach a lasting peace deal.
South Sudan has 10 more days to reach a lasting peace and power-sharing deal. Both the African Union and the East African bloc IGAD have repeatedly threatened South Sudan's factions with sanctions if no comprehensive power-sharing deal is reached by March 5. IGAD's lead mediator, Seyoum Mesfin, called this round of negotiations the final opportunity for South Sudan.
After months of negotiations, you are all well aware of what must be achieved now. Genuine compromise and dialogue must take place. The agreed March 5 deadline to conclude negotiations must be respected so that the pre-transitional period can begin on April 1 and the transitional government of national unity formed no later than July 9 of this year.
Other items on the agenda for this round of talks, besides establishing the transitional government of national unity, are security, economy, justice, and humanitarian affairs. There's also a committee dealing with leadership and governance issues. Both sides at the start of the talks reaffirmed their commitment to peace. Several deals have been signed since January 2014, including a cessation of hostilities agreement. But IGAD says there are verified reports that both sides have violated the ceasefire agreement. It is expected the United Nations Security Council will consider a resolution on South Sudan this week, including the possibilities of sanctions. South Sudan's Information Minister Michael McQuay says sanctions will only complicate things.
The sanctions will not be doing anything other than adding more suffering to the people of South Sudan. So, calling for sanctions is not a solution, it is a complicating factor. And I'm sure those who call for sanctions are people who are not genuinely wishing South Sudan peace.
The conflict started in December 2013 between soldiers of President Salva Kiir and troops loyal to former Vice President Riek Machar. The two leaders will face each other again later this week. Their last meeting at the end of the African Union summit in January did not result in any real outcome. Marta van der Wolf for VOA News, Addis Ababa.
The Troika for South Sudan notes that President Kiir is not in Addis Ababa for this crucial round of talks. The Troika is made up of the United States, the United Kingdom and Norway. In a statement read at the talks by British Special Envoy Matt Cannell, the Troika says it is deeply concerned by Mr. Kiir's absence. The statement calls on all the South Sudan's leaders to set aside their personal ambitions and reach a compromise on key issues, including the makeup of a future transitional government. This is necessary if peace is to be restored in the young country, the Troika says.
The Troika pointed the finger of the blame for the conflict at all sides of South Sudanese leaders. It notes that 2 million South Sudanese have fled their homes and are living as refugees in the neighboring countries or internally displaced in the regions inside South Sudan. Millions are facing food shortages, and South Sudan is not thinking of economic crisis caused by the conflict, the statement says.
The Troika calls on the United Nations Security Council to consider imposing sanctions on South Sudanese leaders. It also calls for a report by an African Union Commission of Inquiry into human rights abuses committed during the 14-month-old conflict in South Sudan to be made public. The report was supposed to be published last month, but was delayed at the last minute by the African Union Peace Council.
Delegates from the government and the SPLM in opposition have assured IGAD that they will work to end the more than one-year conflict in South Sudan. Both women activists and faith-based organizations are demanding that President Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar end the war immediately and sign a peace deal. Anglican Bishop Enoch Tombe told delegates at the opening of the talks that South Sudanese people have suffered enough. He says leaders of the ruling SPLM must assure and resolve their differences and put to end their violence. And he praised efforts by the Tanzanian ruling party to reunite the various SPLM factions.
This final session is coming after the signing of the Arusha Agreement for reunification of the divided ruling party, the Sudan People Liberation Movement. The agreement, among other things, has given a lot of hope to the suffering people of South Sudan that at long last the leaders of SPLM have come to realize the need to resolve their differences peacefully instead of through violence.
The SPLM opposition delegate today renewed his group's commitment towards ending the conflict through peaceful means. Diu Motok says his group is committed to resolve the remaining issues.
The SPLM-SPLA delegation has come back to Addis Ababa fully aware of the enormous suffering of our people since the events of December 15, 2013. The dire condition of our people and the impending humanitarian catastrophe impel us to seek peace.
The spokesman for the former SPLM detainee says neither Machar or President Kiir are fully committed to resolve the conflict. John Luke says the two sides might stop fighting in Upper Nile and Jonglei Unity States. He says it is meaningless to negotiate and fight at the same time.
More than a year has already been spent on these efforts since the crisis erupted in mid-December 2013 without achieving peace. The war is continuing to rage in our young nation. All this is happening despite agreements and repeated commitments to the cessation of hostilities by the warring parties.
A representative of women group at the peace talks agreed with John Luke. Eman Enoch says too many agreements have been dishonored. She says women have suffered more than men who continue to fight.
All those signatures have become hopeless to the people of South Sudan. Without implementation, we have suffered enough. Enough is enough. Stop the war. We condemn this war. Appeal to our leaders to put the interests of our citizens first.
The delegates are expected to continue to discuss the issues of the permanent ceasefire, security and power sharing. That report was prepared by South Sudan in Focus host John Tanza, who is covering the event in Addis Ababa.
Meanwhile, members of different factions of South Sudan's SPLM party agreed last week in Arusha to implement a deal to reunify the party. The talks in Arusha are being mediated by Tanzania's ruling Chama Cha Mapinduzi Party, or CCM. The talks run parallel to the peace talks in Addis Ababa, even though the two processes are separate. Philip Thon Aleo has the story from Juba.
After meeting with President Salva Kiir and members of the SPLM's political bureau in Juba on Saturday, CCM Secretary General Abdurrahman Kinana says he received assurances that the reunification deal will be implemented swiftly.
I would be able to complete the implementation of the agreement within the next 45 days, which means that the next processes will not be in Arusha anymore, but the processes will continue in Juba. That means the reunification of the SPLM family will now start in Juba.
The SPLM groups agreed to reunite during a January summit in Arusha, Tanzania. CCM and South Africa's ruling African National Congress Party mediated the talks, which began in October of last year. The January 21st agreement says President Kiir, who is also the chairman of the SPLM, must revoke his orders, which led to the expulsion of some of the party's senior members. The president later said he had asked for the word revocation to be replaced with reconsideration. South Sudanese Foreign Affairs Minister Barnaba Marial Benjamin says President Kiir held a meeting on Friday with former SPLM detainees in Nairobi. They are called the meeting generally productive.
The former detainees have expressed their willingness to come back home to Juba and to the Republic of South Sudan. So they wanted assurance from His Excellency President Salva Kiir Mayardit for their coming back home. And the president welcomed them, assured them that they can come back home. Their physical security will be guaranteed, like it is the duty of any government to protect the security of its civilians.
Kinana says his meeting with Kiir on Saturday and senior members of the SPLM party gave him hope that the agreement will be respected.
I want to say that I leave Juba happy and satisfied, and want to reiterate the commitment of CCM and ANC to work with the SPLM towards the total reunification of the SPLM family.
But Kinana acknowledged that much work lies ahead.
I do not mean that it is going to be that easy, but we will all put our efforts together under the leadership of President Salva Kiir towards achieving that goal.
Kinana did not say when other SPLM members will arrive in Juba. Marial says the former detainees will come to Juba and that President Kiir will make decisions on implementing the Arusha Unification Agreement during that period.
Whether they will be in their positions or not, that will be announced by the chairperson of the SPLM, who is President Salva. That is the party to do that. What I know, they are allowed to come back to their country, and the president has assured their security.
It is not clear when the former detainees will arrive in Juba. South Sudan in Focus was not able to reach the former detainees leaders for comment on this story. The Arusha talks have been held separately from the IGAD mediated talks in Ethiopia. For VOA News, I am Philip Tonaleo in Juba.
The United Nations Children's Fund, or UNICEF, says scores of children, some as young as 13, were abducted by armed men in Upper Nile State last week. UNICEF says it has reports from the state that the children are being trained as fighters, but it cannot say which armed group is holding them. The abductions come just a week after several hundred children were released from the ranks of David Yaoyao's rebel group in Jonglei State. Worker Simon Wudu reports for VOA from Juba.
UNICEF reported over the weekend that at least 89 children were abducted in the town of Wau Siluk, around 12 miles northeast of Malakal. John Bath, the communications officer for the UN Children's Agency in South Sudan, says the actual number could be much higher.
According to witnesses, armed men surrounded the community and searched house by house. Boys older than 12 years of age were taken away by force.
UNICEF says it has no evidence of who was behind the mass abduction, but it says the incident happened in an area in Upper Nile that is under government control. But says witnesses in Wau Siluk report that they have seen the children since they were taken on February 15th and 16th.
Witnesses have said they're in a training camp, and witnesses have already told UNICEF that on at least two occasions the children were marched through the town.
UNICEF reported the abductions 4 days after they happened. Upper Nile Education Minister William Poor says state officials are unable to confirm that the children were abducted. The government, former Vice President Riek Machar's rebel group and other armed groups have pledged to stop recruiting children to fight in armed conflicts. South Sudan has had a law on the books since 2008, banning children from joining armed groups. But last week, Human Rights Watch said the government and opposition forces are continuing to recruit child soldiers despite promises they would stop. A Human Rights Watch researcher said the recruitment of child soldiers is particularly prevalent in Malakal, the Upper Nile state capital, while Siluk is just 12 miles away from Malakal. UNICEF is calling for the children abducted in Wau Siluk to be released immediately.
The recruitment and use of children by armed forces destroys families and communities. Children are exposed to incomprehensible levels of violence. They lose their families and their chance to go to school.
In a report released last year, UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon said the recruitment and use of children as soldiers has increased since South Sudan erupted in conflict in December 2013. Ban said the groups that are chiefly responsible for using child soldiers are the army, six rebel groups including the one led by Machar, and armed groups from Sudan. Ban's report says nearly 4,000 South Sudanese children have been recruited as soldiers in the past 4 years. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Sudanese opposition parties say they will boycott the April presidential elections, saying they will not be free and fair. A top Sudanese official says that's the wrong attitude. More on that when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what is the best advice you got from your father?
The best advice I got from my father was to stay away from guys. And I follow it by trying to stay away from them, trying to focus on my education, because what my dad told me is that guys can actually ruin your life, only you do them in the wrong time.
You will get a lot of people, and without respect, you will not be somebody in the community. But when you respect people, you will be a good boy, and people will respect you in your past. You will be a big man, and they will support you. Now I experience it.
The best advice I got from my father, it was, he said I should follow my dreams. And how am I following it? I'm in school right now, trying to accomplish the dream that I have.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. Philip has also been tracking South Sudan efforts to join the East African Community five-nation bloc known as the EAC. South Sudan has been asked to start technical negotiations which would pave the way for its membership. As we hear from Philip Thona-Leu, President Salva Kiir's economic advisor says negotiations will officially begin on March 23rd.
Economic advisor Agiritisa Sabuni, who is also the co-chair of South Sudan's EAC Application Committee, says South Sudan delegation, which is headed by President Kiir, attended a meeting on Friday of EAC heads of state in Nairobi. Sabuni says the delegation is confident the new country is closer now to joining the EAC than ever before.
South Sudan, by virtue of its the progress it has been making over the last 3 years, has now been elevated to the status of negotiations. It is already now admitted to start technical negotiations as from March 23rd. This is a very serious development. The political considerations have already been sorted out, particularly South Sudan's acceptance to abide by the treaty, the terms of the treaty, bringing together the member states.
South Sudan first applied to join the EAC after it declared its independence from Sudan in 2011. The application was put on hold as member states raised concerns over the country's pledging bureaucratic institutions, weak market structure, and ineffective justice system. Sabuni says those concerns were addressed during the meeting in Kenya. He says Kenya, Uganda, Burundi, Tanzania and Rwanda, the current EAC members, are all convinced that the South Sudanese government is determined to end the 14-month-old-long conflict and has become stable enough to be a legitimate member of the EAC. He says that key negotiation issues that must be addressed include customs charges, taxes, migration, and work permits for citizens of member states. He says this process will take into consideration the needs of all South Sudanese.
South Sudan's accession to the East African Community will be properly handled with the due consultations, with due sharing of the ideas of the key stakeholders. This includes members of the press, the legislators, the states, civil society, and faith-based organizations.
South Sudan has been an observer state for the last 3 years. It has attended all EAC meetings without actively taking part in decision-making process. The EAC was founded in 1967, collapsed in 1977, and was revived again in 2007. Citizens of EAC member states enjoy reduced border migration charges and work permits requirements. Not everyone thinks South Sudan should be allowed into the EAC. Critics like Jacob Chol, a lecturer of University of Juba, say the young nation will be outperformed by well-educated citizens from existing EAC member states, and its citizens will lose jobs in public and private sectors. For VOA News, I am Philip Tonaleo in Juba.
Fighting in the war-torn Nuba Mountains in Sudan has led to an increase in the number of Sudanese refugees fleeing to South Sudan in the last month. In addition to an estimated 1.4 million internally displaced people, South Sudan is also now a home to around 250,000 Sudanese. Adam Bales has more from Yida, where more than 80,000 of them have taken refuge.
Yida Camp in South Sudan's Unity State, one of the country's biggest refugee settlements. Everyone here has fled from a single conflict across the border in Sudan's South Kordofan state. UN officials say there has been a rapid rise in numbers arriving because of recent heavy clashes.
We have seen almost 100% increase in the last month when compared to the same period in 2013-2014, meaning almost 700 to 900 people every week coming to South Sudan.
A bloody civil war has raged for more than 3 years in Sudan's Nuba Mountains, with yearly fighting between Sudan government forces and Sudan's People's Liberation Army North rebels. The spreading ground fighting, intensified bombing by government planes and poor food security forced thousands of families to flee. Nearly 70% of new arrivals are children.
The Antonov planes come during the day and at night too.
The planes bomb people everywhere. Whether you run or not, they bombard and kill you either way. I met neighbors who were hiding indoors one time when an Antonov came, but their house was bombed and they were killed.
People arrive with only what they can carry. Jalila Abraham arrived today. She says it took her 1 week to walk here from her village with her three children.
We came here because we continued to bombard them in the night. That is why we ran away. We moved from one place to another because they follow us to where we go and
bomb us. Many new arrivals will travel to Ajon Thok, a UN camp to the east. But with a capacity for only 25,000 people, it is almost full. While Sudan's government denies it, the Yida camp director, Jacob Osman Kaluka, says the bombing is intentionally driving civilians out of South Kordofan.
Their objective is to scare the people and to let them run away from the SPL control area. That one by burning all the crops in their fields, burning their houses, and giving them no rest. So at least to evacuate, to empty the Nuba Mountains from the human being so that it can just remain like no man land.
Life in Yida camp is basic, but safe. People have access to fresh water and healthcare, with help of humanitarian groups. It is unknown how long the refugees will stay, but after peace talks failed last year, many think they may never return home.
Before the war, we used to farm, but after the bombardment started, we could not continue with that. We lost our parents, and our children lost their fathers, and life was so difficult for us. Before the war, we used to live well, but now we don't.
Meanwhile, UNHCR says another new camp will soon be established to prepare for a surge of refugees expected from across the border in the coming months. Adam Bales for VOA News, Yida Refugee Camp, Unity State, South Sudan.
As the fighting continues in the Nuba Mountains and other parts of Sudan, campaigning for the country's presidential and parliamentary elections begins tomorrow. The elections are scheduled for April 13th. President Omar al-Bashir, who has been in power since 1989, is seeking re-election. The National Electoral Commission says 15 candidates will run for president, although the country's major political parties are boycotting the elections, saying it is a waste of time because they will not be free and fair. Sudan Information Minister Ahmed Bilal says opposition parties boycotting are missing out.
I think everything is now completed, and the parties which are participating, there are about 44 parties that are joining the elections, and things are going very well, no problem. Of course, some of the opposition party are doing a boycott, and they are not going for the elections. They are free to suppress themselves, but the majority of the Sudanese, for sure, they are going for the election.
Exactly. I'm reading that there are 15 candidates who will stand for the presidency in addition to President Bashir. Your critics say that these 15 parties are a creation of President Bashir, and therefore the election is not going to be legitimate.
In fact, actually, I tell you, Sam, we can say that all the opposition parties are just a decoration. They are just names without any sort of people with them. So it becomes some sort of allegation, this year an accusation, this year, see, and this year. Everybody knows that the only thing to be actually in the political game is elections.
Mr. Minister, President Barack Obama last week loosen on certain sanctions on your country. What does your government make of that?
I think this is actually quite a good step appreciated by our government. And for the first time, we feel that the American administration is serious about our government.
The U.S. Special Envoy to Sudan and South Sudan, Mr. Donald Booth, said that the easing on the sanction was consistent with the United States' commitment to promote freedom of expression in Sudan. But yet, Mr. Minister, we are reading that your National Intelligence and Security Services has gone after the media, for example, seizing the full print run of 14 newspapers. That does not sit well.
This happened for one day. They have been actually confiscated for only one day, 14. And we have a big margin for freedom in Sudan. You know, our country, like any African country, is a fragile for its own, you know, national front. And we have many threats. And any sort of talking about the army, which can lead to any sort of instability and break through the national security, cannot be let go like that. And we have talked to the press people many times. We tell them that there should be some sort of red zone. You should not take and should not write and this. And in spite of that, they are doing this.
That's Sudan's Information Minister Ahmed Bilal speaking to VOA's James Batty from Khartoum.
And that brings us to the end of our show for today. We leave you now with the song Labi Amaro by Mede Music.
Olena Marie Vonon Renandero Cecilia
Labi Amaru Nimikechi Amaru
Atane Morosi
Olena Marie Osomururu Nye Vonon Rene
Jiso Njine Dresi
Oso Hati Amabesi Namururu Nye
Nimingu
Utane Jine Osonga Wi Kakechi Akuru Nye Akurimane
Mondo Lobi Nakoro
Fasi Tine Gagari
Azifu Azifu
Kakachina Rube Uni Kakachina
We've been listening to Meda Musica with the song Labi Amaro. I'm Lucy Pone in Washington.
And I'm Michael Atit, also in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Rosa wati ya mabesi na mburuje Kutane jileo songa.